Hello, my dear friend. Welcome back to another episode of the Curious Neuron podcast. My name is Cindy Hovington and I am your host. I am a mom of three from Montreal, Canada, and I have a PhD in neuroscience. I specialize in mental health and well-being, and I'm here to share the science for you, parents, because I think that we don't have enough support out there. And I think that we deserve the science of well-being and psychological and emotional well-being so that we can make decisions, build habits, build skills that'll support us as parents. Some of the stresses we have are a little bit crazy. So we need some support, and I'm here for that. I want to take a moment first to thank the Tannenbaum Open Science Institute for supporting the Curious Neuron podcast, as well as the McConnell Foundation. Without these two organizations that support us, I would not be here right now. I want to also thank you, the listener, for downloading, for subscribing, for leaving a review and a rating for the podcast. If you haven't done so yet, please do so. It really helps the podcast move forward. Not that it really helps, it actually helps. I need those in order for the podcast to continue. So please take a moment to make sure that you are subscribed to the podcast or click out and leave a rating or review. You can do it as fast as just rating it on 5 stars. That really helps me because I need those metrics to make sure that I get the funding. It doesn't pay me. It's not my job, but it pays the people that keep this going because it's a lot of time. It's time consuming to have a podcast, and I'm grateful that I can have that support. So thank you for doing that. In today's episode, we are focusing on moms. I have a special guest who has a book coming out written for moms. So I want to invite everyone to take a moment because I do think that what we talk about covers well-being. And so it applies to everyone. The mother load, which is what we'll be talking about, you know, taps into when we set boundaries and when we have to kind of step back and think about what we're doing and if we're doing too much and how to ask for help and how to nurture our well-being. So it is an important one for all of you. I do want to take a moment before I begin. I know that I don't often talk about things in my life. I had spoken to you about traveling a year ago and I'm traveling again. So I do want to talk about it. And I'm also excited to share where I'm going in case you are there, then you can come and visit me. So at the end of April, I will be heading out to California. This is the first time that I visit the West Coast. I haven't visited the West Coast in Canada or in the States. So I'm flying all the way to the other side and I will be in San Francisco and Palo Alto for a few days, not very long, but just enough to go there and give a talk and to visit. I also have a friend who's joining me, my longtime friend from high school. We have been talking about, you know, taking a trip together. We've been talking about this since we were in our 20s. We had looked at some point into taking a trip to California. And when she found out that I was heading out to California to give a talk, she just joined. She didn't ask, she just joined. And I'm so excited because this will be my first trip with a friend. I've never done that before. And we're going to take time to drive the coast a little bit and visit Napa Valley and just hang out and chat. And there's so many reasons why I'm excited for this trip. So many firsts in this trip. Just being with a friend and relaxing for the first time in a long time. Work for a little bit, but not much. And the talk too, it's the first time that I'm going out into the West Coast to give a talk to a school. And I'm really excited for that. So before I switch on to today's podcast, I just want to share with you that I will be in Palo Alto on April 25th at 7 p.m. So this is a Thursday at Preschool Family. So this is a preschool there in Palo Alto. If you are around, I will be at Cuberly Theater on the 25th. So if you want to register for this event, which you can, you could click the link in the show notes of this podcast episode or send me an email at info@curiousneuron.com and I will see you there in Palo Alto. If you work at a preschool or even at your workplace, if they offer lunchtime talks or well-being events, you can send me an email at info@curiousneuron.com or visit my website, curiousneuron.com, and click on contact. I do give talks at workplaces. I've done this for Airbnb and other local businesses, and I also give talks at school. So this week, I will be at St. Vincent Elementary School twice, once for the parents. And then next week, I will be at the English Montreal School Board training the preschool teachers. We'll be talking about emotional development in the brain and how a teacher could support the development of a child when it comes to their emotions or social emotional skills. So I'm really excited to share all this knowledge with everyone. So please send me an email if you want to book a session or to at least get some information. We could jump on a Zoom. All right. So my guest today is Erica Jossa, and I'm excited to speak with her. She's a therapist who specializes in mental health, specifically for moms. She has a book coming out tomorrow, Releasing the Mother Load. The link is in the show notes. I had the opportunity to read it and to talk to her about this, and I really enjoyed the book. It just felt like that sort of friend that was there for you, which is what her podcast, Happy as a Mother, and her Instagram page has always been for me. It's where I started seeing more posts around mom rage, which you know that I liked. It's mom rage, but it's rage. Anybody can have rage. But it was the first time where I started questioning, like, oh yeah, that can happen. And that is something important for us to talk about. So she tends to find the little nuances or things that we don't want to talk about or things that we're not sure if we should talk about. And she talks all about it on her podcast and Instagram page, and now in her book, where she gives you advice as well. So she is a fantastic resource, and I absolutely love chatting with her. She's so calm and nurturing and just a wonderful human. So let's have a chat, shall we, with Erica, and I will see you on the other side. Bye. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast, and I am here now with Erica. Welcome, Erica.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be with you.
Yes. I think this is your first time on my podcast. I've been on yours, and we need to have this conversation. You know, we chatted a long time ago on Instagram, and I've been following your journey, and it's very clear from the start, it's been very clear how passionate you are about helping moms. And it's been truly wonderful to see you and Momwell grow, and now your book coming out. I am just so excited for you. So first, congratulations on the work that you do.
Thank you so much. Oh my gosh. I never went to school to license as a therapist to think I'd end up here. The journey has been so interesting. But thank you. It's so exciting to finally have the book out in the world. Such a project in the background, like 2.5 years. So finally get to celebrate it. Yeah.
But you know, I got the same feeling from everything that you put out there, which was the feeling of being seen as a mom and finally feeling validated. So has that been part of the why behind everything that you do with Momwell?
Yeah, it's really interesting. You know, I went through my own postpartum depression and anxiety. Mm. I had been a therapist working with children and families for, I don't know, nearly 10 years. I had 7 years of education. I hadn't even heard of maternal mental health as a specialty, like did not come up in all of that time. Oh my gosh. And so I didn't know to be on the lookout that it was a high risk time that I might struggle. And so as a clinician who does this for a living, going through postpartum depression and anxiety really threw me off, like in a number of ways. Mm. And it wasn't until I like dug in to understand and to specialize in maternal mental health that I began to realize that this is a vast problem for people. And not only is it a vast problem, but when they feel that way, they feel isolated in it. They feel like they are the only one, so we don't necessarily turn to each other. And then we might go to our general provider or to a general therapist even who doesn't have any training, and then be told like, oh, this is what motherhood is, or oh, you're just adjusting, you're just sleep deprived, you just need some rest. Right. And women were being dismissed and gaslit kind of left, right, and center. So what I do commonly hear is what you've just said, where I felt so seen and acknowledged for the first time, putting my thoughts or experiences into words. And I feel like I'm kind of a translator of sorts. Like I do just kind of put that language to that experience, which can feel so validating just to be seen in that way.
Just the post I remember a while ago you had posted, and you still do, a post about rage. And, you know, I think for me, even reading the comments, it felt like people we're wondering, like, is everything okay with me? Am I normal? Is this common? And like you just said, realizing that we're not the only ones already just in that feels good. And you're like, oh, okay, she has it too. Or, you know, just getting to know yourself as well. So I'm assuming, you know, that you've heard a lot of this from your community in terms of, I only through your post or through the work that you do realize that I'm not the only one.
Mm-hmm. And it comes up in a couple of areas. One, major one is the invisible load post. Mm-hmm. And that's where the whole releasing the mother load book came from, because invisible labor or mental load, mental labor is invisible. And that's why it's so pervasive. Like, we can't quite put our finger on it. I equate it to an invisible backpack that we're handed when our kids are born, that we feel the weight of it. We know it's there. We feel it.
Right.
But I can't describe to you, because it's no one singular little task. It's not just the one doctor's appointment I have to book. It's not just the one little, like the lunch I have to pack today. It's all the other things that go into that that really feel heavy to carry, especially when we feel like we're doing it alone. So that is a big one, putting that into words, and it's invisible. And then the other one is anger and mom rage, because it's invisible in the sense that we don't see others talking about it, and everybody looks very matching outfits, curated, beautiful highlight moments, and we don't know that they might be losing their cool at bedtime too. And so we go underground in shame with those feelings, and they're not openly talked about a lot. So we bring that piece into it too, and people often feel validated having that conversation.
Right. And, you know, the invisible load, and not just the invisible load, but the load of motherhood. I love how you kind of broke that down into your book. And the way I saw it is like the different hats that we wear, that, like you said, we don't like consciously just stop and think about it all. And when you break it down the way that you did, I think it really helps us. And, I think back to the way that I am, and kind of realizing as I was going along that I was putting a lot of pressure on myself for certain things, and that in the end, certain things didn't really matter, but I needed the house to be perfect just in case, you know, I needed the meals to be perfect because I put this pressure on myself. Do you think that part of this load are pressures that we place on ourselves?
It's such an interesting question. I get, when I was shopping the book around, the concept of the book, I'm talking to mom and I'm talking about our beliefs and why we carry this load and how we carry this load. Mm. And I got a lot of, why is this book being written for mothers and not for partners? Like, partners need to be the ones to contribute and chip in. 100%. That is true. And also, we have grown up with images and ideals of motherhood everywhere, from the time that we were born through till we become mothers ourselves. And in the book, I equate it to this drawer labeled like motherhood or mom. And everything that we ingest and take in throughout the years gets shoved into this drawer. And it's contradicting. It's maybe idealistic. It's all kinds of things. And then we step into motherhood, and like, that's all we have to go off of, was all of this junk we kind of like gathered and shoved in there. And we haven't really like intentionally sorted through any of it. And much of what is put in there is expectations of others, value systems of others, social expectations and norms from others. And so little of it is intentionally ours. So it is so easy when we walk into motherhood, or we enter into motherhood, to feel pressure in every single direction, because we don't have any clear guiding force. We feel the need to go everywhere, right? Like, we feel the need to be perfect in every aspect of everything. And it is so common. It's such a common experience, especially I feel like the first transition into motherhood, like that first time mom, because you start to find your identity and your groove a little bit more as you go. But it all kind of comes to a head, and we're forced to let some things go, find our identity, and figure out what works for us.
I think back to my question originally, and I think you're right. I was thinking about what the expectations or the pressures we put on ourselves, but that pressure of having that clean home in case somebody comes, or, you know, if somebody sees it or whatever it is because of others, not ourselves. So it really does
internalized.
Come down to, right. Right. Yeah. That's so good. So let's say somebody is listening to this and they're like, yeah, I identify with all this. This is me. How do they begin some of this work? I guess putting into thought, or putting into context also the different hats that you talk about, right? Like, how do we begin this work to kind of lessen this pressure that we have on ourselves?
Yeah. Well, I will say the book is a guide to do that. It's the very intention of why it is written, to walk you through so you don't have to do that mental trying to navigate your way through. But one really tactical, like in the moment strategy is stopping when you feel that pressure and just asking, where does this expectation or should come from right now? An example that I have of this is I remember we were hosting, I don't know, family holiday, Christmas, something. And I found myself scrubbing the baseboards in my bathroom, like my powder room on my main floor, scrubbing the baseboards. I'm like, what the frick am I doing? I do not care about these baseboards being clean, like low on the priority list, right? You know? Yeah. And when I paused and just questioned what it was, like this automatic reflex that just kicked in, I realized I felt a strong, my mom was very particular about how the house was kept. And so my way to show her that I'm being a good mom is by keeping house, let's say. Yeah. And so that knee-jerk reaction was just because of something that I had observed. But do I really care about the baseboards being squeaky clean? I really don't. There are a million other things I care about before the baseboards. Right. And so just catching yourself in that moment where you go into this automatic behavior or reaction, but and it feels a pressure, like there's eyeballs on you almost, and questioning like, what is guiding this for me right now?
I'm thinking of that scenario, and I know it's a very common one. I think common is like the keeping your house clean for the mother or the mother-in-law, but also how you're parenting your child. You know, there might be people judging you, and you, especially what I hear a lot from parents or moms is, you know, when the child has big emotions or tantrums, that's really hard. Cause like you said, like the eyeballs are on you. But what if, you know, this not cleaning those baseboards leads to comments from your family? How can a mom sort of learn how to cope? Do you cope with it, or do you set a boundary? Do you let it go? How do you cope with that?
Yeah, there is no shortage of people who want to hand us their priorities and their value system. Like it's everywhere we turn. It's on Instagram. It's in our interactions with our mother-in-laws and our family members. And in the book, one of the foundational chapters at the beginning is taking you through understanding your own value system as a person and also as a mother. Because when you understand what you value and what your family values and what is important to you, when somebody comes along and says something like, why aren't you signed up for activities after school? You're like, because right now, like it doesn't align with what's important to us or our value. Like you can see and recognize that they carry around their bag of values with them that they're trying to distribute to you for you to adopt and pick up, right? Mm-hmm. So when there's like clarity there, you can see that this actually isn't about me and my behavior. It isn't about the fact that I'm failing my child because they're not in after school activities. It's just about the fact that we have difference in values and approach, and that's okay. I don't have to adopt that model, nor do you have to adopt mine. And we're just not used to living in that space. We have very pigeonholed thoughts and ideals for how things should go. And boundary setting, once you do know those values, is definitely one of those pieces. Like, I appreciate that works well for you and your family, but that's just not our thing.
Yeah. That after school activity example and the values is such an important one, because I do know lots of people in my own surroundings that feel the pressure to put their kids in so much. And
yeah,
I was having breakfast with a friend of mine, and she was explaining what her weeknights look like and what her weekends look like. And my response to that was, when do you guys sit down at home and chill and just relax? And she was like, Cindy, like Friday nights, if there's no party, you know, at somebody's house. And she seemed to have this sort of pressure of, well, we need to, I have to put them in this, I need to put them in that. And it's, I think it's a really important conversation to have and to go back to our values, because that creates a huge load on us, you know, like especially coming back from work and having to rush to do all these things. So I think it really is important. You know, you mentioned values, and I do think that it's something I talk a lot about, because I think that sometimes we forget about them and we need to come back to them. Do you have any advice for somebody who has forgotten this and needs to kind of reassess like what their values are? Is there like one or two questions that they can ask themselves?
Yeah, there's a couple of exercises even that are really tangible. I have a free download on my website ericajossa.com, D-J-O-S-S-A, and I can send that to you to distribute to your community. Mm-hmm. And it's a value sort where you like cut out the cards, you put them out in front of you, and it's kind of think it through, maybe talk it through with your partner, process of elimination to find your way to your values. But I think one of the bigger issues is that when we enter motherhood, we're in a little bit of a transformation time, right? Like we're in matrescence mm-hmm. where our values are getting a really big overhaul and reorganization. Mm-hmm. And we're also reevaluating the shoulds that we have been put on us. Like there's mm-hmm. just a lot of like existential identity things happening during this time, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the sneaky things about these shoulds and these internalized pressures that we were talking about is they can kind of feel like they're what we value. Like when something is internalized and we haven't unlearned it or thought it through, mm-hmm. it might feel like the knee-jerk reaction is because like, well, I care about this. Like, why do I care about this? Do I care about this because I'm trying to protect myself from judgment? Mm-hmm. Because I'm trying to keep up with the parents around me, because I'm trying to prove that I'm a good mom to my mother or mother-in-law? Mm. Or is this something that I truly love and want to do and is important to me and my family? So parsing out those knee-jerk reactions and just being conscious about it goes such a long way. And having the time, it's like if you are sleep deprived and postpartum, like you don't need to carve out your values right now. You just need to sleep. But then when you do have the space to just begin to unpack it a little bit, and a really tangible activity like the value sort or the list in the book can be a really great place to start, because sometimes we don't even have the language. Yeah.
It's true. It's not just about sitting down and saying, okay, what are my values? You really have to give it some thought and like compare certain things. And like you said, I think there are some that are ingrained in us and we don't realize that this might have been a value that I was raised, you know, with, but now it might have changed for me now mm-hmm. as a mom. So I absolutely love that. We will share that link and I hope everybody will get the book so they can see it as well. I'm thinking about work-life balance. I don't personally like that term mm-hmm. because I don't know if that exists. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that for parents or for moms who feel like it's a never-ending battle to balance both. And that really adds to that invisible load that we have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was doing a talk on burnout at one of the big banks here in Toronto with their women's group. Mm. And digging into the stats, 50 or 75 years ago, okay, don't quote me 100% here. I'm pretty sure it's 50 years ago. Only 25% of women mothers worked outside of the home. And now it's nearly 80% in only 50 years. So we had one role and job literally, which was to keep house, childcare, all of that was our role at the time. Now in a mere like 50, 60 years, 80% of us are working full time and trying to do this full time role because society hasn't adjusted to free us up from this previous role that we're just expected to carry still, right? Yeah. So like we still have 100% of this work, which was a full-time job, by the way, and now actually work outside of the home or from home or whatever,
right?
Part-time, full-time as well. Mm-hmm. Is it any wonder we feel like we are fraying and coming apart at the seams? Like it is entirely unrealistic. Mm-hmm. So the concept that we can keep all these balls in the air and juggle them, frankly, enrages me because it's so unrealistic to even expect that of somebody, right? Like it's just like mind-boggling when you lay it out on paper. But there's also this interesting trend that's happening in motherhood right now, though, and it's called intensive mothering or the perfect mother myth, where we're seeing this, and research is seeing, and sociologists are seeing this push towards all involved, all consuming, all self-martyring motherhood that requires every piece of you or you're doing it incorrectly. So you have to give all your time, all your resources, all your energy, all your attention to your child in order to be a good mom and to be doing your job right. And so, of course, when we work or have a project or miss a field trip that I'm going to miss next week because I have a work trip I have to do, or I'm going away for 6 days and the kids cried and had a meltdown, and it's like, sorry, I understand that's difficult, but mommy has a work trip. You know, anytime we start to put anything before motherhood, we are shamed back into our place very quickly. So it's this, we're meant to still carry the housework and all the care work and do it with a smile and dare not be angry, anything but patient and kind and loving, and be satisfied with that role. But also a lot of women want things outside of that role. And it feels scary to talk about wanting that, or just frankly, economically need to go to work and do things outside of that role. So it is a cluster F of a situation, honestly. It's a really, it's a really unfair sort of stacked against us role to be put in. And there's a lot of work being done about like the household labor piece and just bringing this to the surface, because so much of this is unpaid labor off the backs of moms and women. So I would, short answer is, Cindy, that it's unrealistic and there is no such thing as keeping all of these things in some static balance state. It's just frankly impossible to do.
Exactly. I agree with you. And I'm thinking now, you know, to the mom who's listening to this and feeling like, okay, I feel seen now, but what are my next steps? You know, we talked a lot about what's outside the home, and you mentioned a few times roles and within the home. How can we navigate that if within our own home, there is this struggle of how to divide the work and how to divide, especially the parenting aspect, if the partner isn't stepping up? And there are, I also want to talk about the other side where there are partners who are stepping, you know, in and helping a lot, and we're seeing a big change in that. So I don't want to isolate those, because I know that there are, but I do get so many emails from moms who are overwhelmed and are the only ones taking their sick days, you know, to go take care of their kids. They are the only ones who are, you know, doing, taking care of bath time or bedtime while the partner is home. So I know that that exists as well. How would you kind of support that mom that's listening to this in having that conversation that will be an uncomfortable, maybe, conversation with her partner, but it's definitely needed?
I feel like this is a bit of a double-edged sword, or sort of two-sided conversation, because on one hand, you've got, let's say, the willing partner who wants to contribute, and we're going to get the fair play method and the cards, and we're going to distribute the things in the home, and we're going to talk about ownership of tasks and responsibility. But then we still end up defaulting back into patterns. Why? Why does that happen? If everything to do with house and care work is in our junk drawer, like telling us that that's what it means to be a good mom, it's woven into our identity and our worth. So if it's not being done a certain way, or the way we would do it, or we feel like we should do it, so the guilt kicks in when my partner takes the day off to go get my kid who's crying and fell on the playground, and it should have been mommy there to soothe them. So there is a piece of this that we sort of unknowingly own, because everything in society tells us we need to be the one. That's what makes us a good mom. So letting go of that, if that's your measuring stick, is really difficult to do unless you're consciously doing the work, which is sort of what the book takes you through, how to do that work. So there's that piece where we fall into this pattern where we default back to old ways. If we don't unlearn the things that got us here, we can make lists all day long and it's not going to change our behavior. So that's a big piece of it. That's it's a really common piece, because a lot of partners are willing. And then when you have partners who are not willing, or you are not partnered, or you're either a single parent or a solo parent by choice, there is a reevaluating of what is in that drawer still that you want to carry. Like, we can release and lessen the load in intentional ways when we evaluate whether all the things that we are carrying were consciously put there or not. So for example, looking at the schedule and the activities and maybe reevaluating why we feel the need to do that and what's driving some of those decisions. Or like, am I sinking so much money into this birthday party and so much stress and time and planning to make it Pinterest worthy because I really feel I need to do that? Or my one-year-old who isn't even going to eat the cake really needs that? Or is that because I feel the need to do that because of all these external pressures and messages? So there's a way to be kind to ourselves and practice like true self-care and self-compassion by doing us a favor and evaluating whether we even care about this stuff. Like truthfully us, once we scrape away all the things that tell us that we should care. And we can do a fair bit of lessening the load just by reevaluating those things that we're carrying.
I'm so happy you brought up the first birthday. This was, I remember after my first child, this was a huge conversation because I actually, for those who are listening who know me, they know I'm an extremely like simplistic person. And my daughter's first birthday was in the park. Like we had a picnic with family members. I made the cake. There were no decorations because we had like a tablecloth from the dollar store that was just like pink and that was it. And that meets my own values, right? I didn't feel the pressure to do it. And my kids now are 4, 6, and 8 and they get choices of like, let's go to the store together and see what's out there and or what's on sale. And then we'll pick the Mario plate if it fits the budget, right? Like whatever it is, it's not a big theme. And I'm so happy you brought that because I know so many of my friends have pressure because their friends are coming and their family members are coming and it has to look good. And for us, maybe it's because I married somebody Italian. It's really about the food. It's just about having a good time with family and having good food and just like making it simple. So I know that's a huge pressure on a lot of people, but it doesn't have to be.
And it might be that you are just in love and the maker type, right? Like it might be that, like I tell a lot of stories in the book about my maid of honor and friend in my wedding, like lives for making pies and baking and like loves it. And if once you evaluate why you're doing that, it's truly coming internally, go for it.
Right. Exactly.
But if it is to, you know, try to avoid judgment and if it is to try and prove to others or ourselves that we're being a good mom, then we're doing it for the wrong reasons. And I talk in the book about how intensive mothering tells us that everything needs to be big and expensive and all consuming, that like high spend and high like time investment equals memorability and connection and like all the things we think we're going to get out of it. But really when I sit back and I think about my favorite birthday party, probably the only one I remember growing up, my mom had like 8 of my friends over. And she let us pick dresses from her closet. We put on heels and she turned the hallway into a runway. It had a curtain and we came out That's from behind amazing. The curtain, strutted down the hallway, and then were awarded like a rolled up certificate piece of paper for like how great we did modeling the clothes. This was the birthday party. The one that I remember. And it probably costs very little. And it didn't need bells and whistles. Like, I can't even remember if there were balloons or not. Like, none of that mattered. It was just really about her understanding me and my friends and what we would enjoy. It was novelty. It was memory making. It was fun. And none of those things have to be so smothering and draining on us. I didn't have she didn't have to go and do a whole balloon arch and then learn how to hand make the cake and then – figure out all the decorations that we're going to coordinate and then the outfit for the kid to match. Like none of that. We just wore her clothes and her shoes and had a pageant. And it was a great time. And I think that can be really freeing when we can take that concept away, that it doesn't have to be a production always.
I'm thinking back to the beginning of our conversation where we just brushed a little bit on like what the rage is, or you know, mom rage in particular. I I like saying rage because when I talk about mom rage, I hear from dad saying, well, I think I experienced this too. So I know my audience are both moms and dads. So I just want to be respectful towards that. But the rage that many moms experience, yeah. I feel that part of that is us not being connected or attuned with ourselves and kind of powering through these days, you know, like with that load that we have on, you know, on our shoulders. And then it just happens. Like moms explain it, you know, from going from 0 to 100. And I'll approach that from an emotional awareness piece saying, well, there was an in-between. It might have been fast, or it might have been right. that something happened during the day or the morning, or it's the accumulation. But that's my perspective as, you know, a neuroscientist, because I feel that we are not aware of these micro emotions that we experience because we're always busy doing so much. How would you explain it from your end? As a clinician, this rage, where is it coming from? And how can a mom who's listening feel that, you know, she can maybe gain a little bit of control over that? Or what can she start doing to work on that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I spend a lot of time in this topic and really trying to parse it apart. And the more that I learn and the more conversations I have and the more I spend in this space, I'm starting to put anger in two big buckets, like big conceptual buckets. When we're talking parental rage or anger, we are talking maybe new parents who are sleep deprived, who are going through hormonal fluctuations, who are trying to adjust to their new role, lacking support, maybe predisposed for some anxiety and depression based on their mental health or their history, and maybe even experiencing depression or anxiety themselves, because we know that anger is a common overlooked symptom for anxiety and depression. So there is this individual biopsychosocial, like a biological experience of anger that is impacted by our mental health and our sleep and our physical body and all of that, which I believe is the anger that you're talking about, that regulation piece.
Right. Yeah.
But then there is this other bucket, and it comes back to what we were talking about off the top, where we expect mothers to do everything and we give them not even like acknowledgement in return. There is this maternal anger or rage or frustration at carrying the entire like load, mental cognitive load of the home, and feeling like it's not even seen or appreciated and feeling invisible because like this isn't even classified as real work to people, you know? And so when I talk about mom rage, I talk about it intentionally for a couple of reasons, because the expectations of mothers and their role is vastly different from fathers. Yes. Mm-hmm. And the expectation for how they manage their anger is also wildly different.
True.
So our window of anger expression that we are allowed to have in motherhood is very narrow. We're meant to be kind and soft and nurturing and soothing and patient and all of these things. So when we are angry or having negative thoughts about our kids or losing our cool, it goes against everything we've been told mothers should be. And so we're not even allowed to feel a human emotion or like express that we're feeling it. We got to kind of smile and grit our teeth and figure our way through it. Of course we're going to explode. Like if we can't, you know, if we're not allowed to feel it and deal with it, and that doesn't mean lash out always, obviously, but if we're not allowed to like allow it to be at the surface and talk about it, and we don't learn the skills to manage it. And we push it underground, and then we do explode. Whereas fathers, if they display anger, or like I was having a conversation with Dr. Reem Asharina of Psyched Mummy, and she was like, yeah, my son's coach will get on him and be like, oh, you guys didn't complete this correctly, so you need to go and do this and laps and push-ups and all this stuff in like this really angry, frustrated tone, kind of reprimanding the kids. Acceptable. For a man to do, seen as, oh, he just wants them to be excellent and he's just wants them to excel and he's just a disciplinarian or he's just whatever. But if a mother was that coach, it would be entirely different.
Yeah.
So
true.
So one, like I'm having this like existential questioning of anger in motherhood right now, being like, is it even that mothers are actually more angry than we ever have been or than other parents are? Or is it just that we're policed to be like such a small window of anger that anything feels jarring to people,
right?
You know? And then, of course, when we feel that we have to constantly stifle our anger, it leads to dysregulation. We don't have the skills then in the moment, or we can't become curious or accept or validate those emotions in the moment because we're so badly trying to outrun them or avoid them.
What can a mom do if she recognizes this in herself and just feels a lot of that shame and guilt that she's yelling at her kids a lot and maybe even her partner because she just feels that immediate rage in these moments? Is there some quick, I know that it's not a quick fix, but is there something that she can do in that moment? Is there some sort of reflection or thought or a pause perhaps that she can do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it reminds me of a bit of an analogy that I was reading about. When you have a fire in the house, you know, and you realize that there is a fire burning, you don't ignore the fire. You don't try and push it away. You don't try to ignore it. It is common sense to us that that will set the whole thing ablaze, right?
It's true.
So if we are feeling a fire brewing, we better figure out how we're going to take some deep mindful breaths or, you know, step away from the situation for a moment. Maybe, usually in my case, feed myself a snack. Right. That's like 90% of the time my issue, or have a good sleep and revisit it tomorrow. But what we're not going to do is just allow that fire to build and build and build until the whole place is burning down. Like, that fire is much more difficult to put out than if we've paid attention to it initially. And that part takes some practice, as you've mentioned, and I'm sure you teach a lot about, is we're not so good at recognizing when the fire is like a little flame. Right. And so that's a really great place to start and just notice how you're feeling. Notice that trigger or that small fire. It's a lot easier to extinguish.
And many of those, I guess, little fires that I think of come back to us not addressing our needs, right? Like everything you just said now, feeding ourselves, taking a nap if we have to, trying to get some rest that night, going to bed early. There are needs that we have that we are so quick to put aside because, well, I can't go to bed now. I'm going to fold that laundry, or, you know, I'm not going to eat now because if I clean or if I do something or get ahead of, you know, in my work, maybe it'll be better. And we forget about that. And I have to say, that's something I struggled with a lot and still do, because everything always seems to matter more than what I have to do for myself. And it's so hard. You're right. It's not something that's going to happen overnight, because we're going to have to keep reminding ourselves that we matter enough to go for a walk, you know, like take that half hour and just go for a walk. It took me years to realize that I had to go for that walk. So I just want to make sure that I say that, because I know if there's a mom, especially a new mom who's listening, you might be hearing people tell you, go for that walk, just go, you're home. But I was home with three kids, and one after the next, every time I had three kids in under 4 years. And for me, it was just a matter of, it's not the right time. Somebody needs me. And I forgot that I needed me too. And it wasn't the right, I wasn't in the right chapter of my life to understand that. I only kind of started putting the work into that after my third was about 3 years old. And that's when things changed for me. And I had so much guilt for all those years, because I kept saying, like, why can't I just do it? But then after having my third, I realized it wasn't the right time. And now I'm in the right mind space to do it. So I want to put that out there in case somebody can relate to that, because you're not alone.
And it's very counterculture and counterintensive mothering to even validate our own needs and wants beyond caregiving, and even in caregiving, taking care of ourselves, right? Because self-martyrdom is such the norm, to be self-sacrificing, and it is reinforced to be a good mom. We're constantly putting others' needs before our own. And that is the quickest way to burnout that we could, like the fastest track we can ever be on, right? And it takes a mind shift for us to see that we are of the same value and worth as everybody in the house and our needs. And I think we talked about this briefly on my podcast. It's like, they don't need to be first. They don't need to be above everybody else's. We're not talking about being superior or like meeting our needs first and then our children. Like, that's probably unrealistic for most of us. But can they at least be a seat around the table on equal playing field? So my kid eats and I'm gonna also eat. Can we like in tandem try and meet these needs, or like keep, like if my child benefits from socializing and from play dates, is that also a need of mine? And can that be on equal playing field and priority as everybody else in the home? And just practice being equal. That is in itself a step. Exactly. Like it feels like such a pendulum swing to go from last to first. But if we can just be like, you know, the step in between where we don't need to go so extreme, but we do need to factor ourselves in and take care of ourselves.
Given the work that you did and the work you did to put your book, you know, to write your book, what do you think we need to see in terms of changes in our society to start prioritizing, you know, a mother's mental health and her well-being?
The first thing that comes to mind is like media literacy. I don't know why that's the first thing, but because so much of why we are struggling is because of the internalized ideals and pressures. If we had some literacy around how to critically evaluate the messages we are seeing, we wouldn't adopt them as truth. And that is a freeing principle and skill to learn, right? If I can see somebody on social media who has a curated home with their six children in matching outfits and a sourdough loaf of bread being cut in the reel or TikTok, and know that that's literally that person's job. They get paid to do that. And it's highly curated. Nothing about it is realistic. Then I can be compassionate with myself. But without that literacy to understand and to critically evaluate the messages we're taking in, it becomes our new standard and source of truth. It's the new bar that we now have to achieve. And that's a dangerous game to play with ourselves.
I do think of those posts where it's like, hi, I'm a mom of four or five or six or whatever it is, and here are my perfect little dinosaur sandwiches that I've made for all six kids' lunches. If that's your thing, it's okay, but we need to let those go, because you're right. It just sets a standard that sets us up. It's not that it sets us up for failure, but we have that in our minds thinking that that's what we have to get to. And it's not. It's okay. Whatever you send your kid with, you know, it's okay.
Like, that's realistically what other people are doing. Right. It sure is not. It sure is not the reality for 99% of other people sending lunches to school. My lunches are shameful, but I honestly, it comes home anyway. So let's not, right? It's a whole other conversation. But yeah, it's just, it feels aspirational, but it's really self-torture. It's really self-torture. Yeah.
What do you, to end our conversation, what would you say are some of the 2 to 3 really take-home tips that a parent, that a mom could listen to and say, okay, as of tomorrow, you know, these are the things I'm going to work on this invisible load that I have and to start that work. I'm assuming values is one of them, because we spoke a lot about values, right?
Values are your anchor or your GPS or your guidepost. Like, doing that work to understand what's really important to you is something tangible, and it's fairly quick. You just dedicate a little bit of time to think it through, and then that becomes something you carry with you. So it's not super involved or a long process. So that's a really great practical place to start. The invisible load and mental labor really has power over us when it remains invisible. And so I talk in the book about my aha moment, where all of a sudden I just could look around and see all the invisible labor that went with every task. It was just like it clicked and I just got it. We all need to have that moment. We all need to be able to make that invisible labor visible, because we can't share it or redistribute it or let go of it otherwise. And that could just be as simple as writing down all the pre-tasks that have to go into making the lunch, as we were talking about. Putting those things down, start to make those pieces visible. And how are we going to divide out all those pieces rather than just the making the lunch task. Mm-hmm. So visibility is, it takes a lot of the power away when we can identify what we're really dealing with, clearly identify the problem.
So those lists matter. We do have to write it down. Not a list, but not, I think you're right.
Not in the, I'm managing my partner and I have to write them a list because they can't do their own thinking, because that comes up in my community a lot. Let's just be clear. We are not responsible to be making and handing the list over.
Got it.
That's not the type of list we're talking about. But like clearly having a bird's eye view of what this work really involves.
I agree with you. And I think it just also, I don't know if this links to what you're just saying, but for me, just to delegate, not between me and my partner, but realizing that my three kids that are home, I don't need to find ways to not be with them to get certain things done within the home. They're getting older now. And the more I include them and I let them know what my workload is, I've become a lot more verbal about it. And I noticed that they get excited. They're like, "Ooh, it's Friday. It's laundry day. What can we do?" You know, versus, "Guys, I have a really heavy day today. I need you to stay busy as long as you can, because, you know, we're five people in the house and I need to get things done." I've noticed the more that I let them know about it, the easier it gets on me. So I think, you know, when your kids are getting older, it really helps to, again, it's not about delegating tasks, but putting it out there and just talking about what your workload looks like.
Mm-hmm. And I think that it's almost putting boundaries and structure to it. Or maybe we front load our time with them and we've been playing dominoes, chicken foot, random game I played growing up. We've been playing that. And if I front load that on our day and we get that quality time in, then I know that I have a little bit more freedom also to do the things that I need to do or include them in them, because I'm not the default assumed person to fulfill these roles in our home. That's something that we're challenging. So getting them involved and not, everyone doesn't automatically look to mom for a care or household task, but they understand that they've got a piece in that division of responsibility that they too can own.
Exactly. Thank you so much, Erica, for joining me today. Congratulations on the release of your book, Releasing the Motherload. I am so happy and can't wait for everybody to have a read and to get their copy. And where else can people follow you and find you, your website or Instagram?
Yeah, I am Momwell on Instagram, momwell.com for therapy services, educational resources, workshops, courses, all the things. And you can find the book through there also, but the book is Releasing the Motherload, ericajosta.com, or anywhere books are sold, Amazon, anywhere. You can find it anywhere. So thank you so much for having me. This was amazing.
I loved it. Thank you for this conversation.
And thank you for listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and leave a rating and review and follow us on Instagram at curious_neuron. Visit the website at curiousneuron.com or come say hi at info@curiousneuron.com. And don't forget, when you do leave a rating or review, send me a screenshot and I will send you a $10 discount for the Reflective Parent Journal. That is my new 100-page reflection guide on the website, and it's $29.99, or you can have it for $19.99 if you leave a review. I hope you have a lovely and beautiful week. Bye, everyone.